My Mac Magazine podcast, sponsored by Otherworld Computing. This week, we chat with the infamous BJ Bat. And we have a new contest, show number 183.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com podcast.
And as the theme music from Kevin Reeves, our original theme, winds down, we want to thank Kevin Reeves again for writing that music for us and composing it and recording it and sending it in, lo, those many years ago. We still love it, and it's original, so, you know, we have to use it, and I really dig it. We're going to start the show this week with Sam Levin's Cool Mac Picks. Sam's joining us right now. Hello, Sam.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. We also have Guy Searle and David Cohen. How are you doing out there, David?
I'm fine.
I'm having a hard time tonight. I don't know what's going on. And Guy Searle, hello, Guy.
Tim is off his meds.
I am off my meds. Something's going on. You know what I think it is? Usually I have one of the headsets off my ears, the headphones, and I had them both on, so I couldn't hear myself talk very well. I think that was throwing me off. So I'm good now. I've moved one off my ear. I can hear myself, and I can hear you guys, so that's always a good thing. So, Sam, what's going on in the Mac world? What's cool out there this week?
Well, you know, there's several companies that have come up with new, well, cases, I guess you could say, or skins. I'm into, you know, bags and skins and cases for our portable devices and Macs and MacBooks. And so I figured we'd kick it off with the MacBook Air, since it's pretty hot and cool, and few companies are coming out with slip covers and whatnot, but our friends over at Spec Products have come up with a cool, cool product called the See-Through Slim Hard Shell Case for the MacBook Air. Now, these are the guys that have made cases and iPod covers for many, many years. They've been around and they've been doing it for, oh, God knows how long, since the first couple iPods that have come on the scene. But they make this really cool plastic see-through case, very, very slim. It's form-fitting for the MacBook Air. It comes in four different colors, and it's pretty sweet. Now, I have one in front of me. Unfortunately, I don't have an Air yet, but it's...
Cough, Apple, cough.
It's nice. It's $49.95, and it will protect the MacBook Air, the entire MacBook Air, front and back. And I really like what they've done with the see-through shell.
It looks like it actually has like a little slot for the ports as well.
Right, it's got all the slots, guys. It's got all the ports exposed so that you can use it in the case. You just leave the MacBook Air inside of this clamshell see-through, and they make the see-through for the MacBook as well as the MacBook Pro.
I have one for my MacBook Pro. I love it. It's fantastic. And both my daughters have multiple see-through cases for their MacBooks. They change colors. Sometimes one will have all green. The next day she might have a green top with a red bottom. I mean, they go crazy with those see-through cases. They love them.
They're nice. They've changed a little of the designs over the last few years. If you go on to the specproducts.com website, you'll see we listed the exact URL so that you don't have to go to just spec. You can go exactly to the placement, you know, for the MacBook Air. But I think they've done a really nice job, as well as they make iPod cases. They make cases for other devices too, like the BlackBerry and stuff like that. These guys are known in the business for acrylics. That's what they're really known for. They do a few different cloth and leather products, but they're really known for plastics. And I think they've done a good job, and that's why we featured them today. Also, our friends in the Great White North of Canada have come up with some pretty cool skins. The company's called Jelliskin, or Jelliskins. And they make a whole line of removable skins for the iPod, iPhone, iPod Touch, MacBook, MacBook Air. If you go to jelliskins.com, you'll see it's really unique. They've got these really cool, funky designers, and I really like the design. I have one on my iPhone right now that's called Oasis or Summer Oasis, something like that. And it's just cool. Now, not only are the skins cool, they're removable, and they're form-fitting, but they also give you the wallpaper. You can download the wallpaper right now for your iPod, iPod Touch, or iPhone free. You can just go to it, click on download wallpaper set, so that you have a matching wallpaper screen that matches your skin. I think it's pretty cool. They've been doing.
They make these for notebooks.
They make
as
them
well.
For notebooks. I asked them. Actually, I would like to put one on a PowerBook 12-inch just to see, because I've tried other skins before. And the problem with some of the skins that I've used is that it mars the surface a little bit and it leaves a residue. Yeah. This is clean. You could pull it right off, and it's just a clean surface. They've done a nice job, but the designs are really alluring. That's what I think sells these skins are the designs.
I remember seeing them at Macworld. They were having a contest on
exactly.
Yeah, they were having like a, you know, bring your own design in. They'll make it right there in front of you.
All right, they have they range from $14.95 to $29.95, and it took me literally 3 seconds to place this on an iPhone. And my only not complaint, but I wish that the whole thing was covered. So that was covered, you know, around the edges. That's the only thing. But then it becomes more difficult to place. So it's a two-edged sword there, or double-edged sword. So I think they've done
a two-inch sword.
I think double-edged. I think they've done a nice job, and I can't wait to see the notebook skins.
They've got such a broad range of designs. I mean, it's sometimes with these skins, they're all very, you know, cutting edge, teen, and that sort of thing. But actually, they've got some real classical art and some really nice images here. Really broad range.
I think so, and they're based out of Toronto, Canada. There's actually a couple different companies that are doing this. We'll feature another one later, but it's a little bit different than the normal skin. But anyway, that's Jealous Skins. And then lastly, our folks at Kensington, they're the guys that make bags as well as power products and whatnot. They've come up with a cool bag called the Kensington Contour Balance Roller. Now, what's neat about this bag is it will hold up to a MacBook Pro or any PC notebook that's that size. That means it's 15.4 inch. And it's got a great cradle design that it holds, you know, really securely the MacBook or MacBook Pro. And it's got rollers built into it. So you can use this to travel if you're going through the airport. You don't want to carry – I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I carry a lot of stuff with my MacBook Pro, and it ends up being 20, 30 friggin' pounds, and that's a lot. Now, they've tailored this. They claim that it's tailored for women, and I don't really understand why, other than that it's got a fancy kind of like little paisley design. I think it works great, and I could care less. I did have it road tested by a woman just to see, and – of course, she loved it, but I used it too, and I think it's a cool design. And there's not a lot of cases that are built this way that are compact, that have a roller and a handle built into it. It's one of those telescoping handles that you use for traveling with.
It looks like a nice case.
It is. It's well built. It's $119.95, and you could use it. You know, you could use it as an overnighter if you want to throw some shirts and stuff like that, as well as your notebook. I've used it for both. I think they've done a good job, and they've just announced their new power battery for the iPhone. I haven't seen it yet, but it was just announced. I think it's just shipping in the next week. We'll feature that over the next couple weeks. I want to get a hold of it. So that's something new from Kensington as well. But they keep on cranking out some pretty cool products.
Did you want to talk about the product that you emailed me about earlier, Sam?
Which product are we talking about? Go ahead.
What is it? Comic Life.
Oh, that's right. Well, I figure we give them a plug, and then we'll kind of feature it over the next few weeks. This is Comic Life Plast. It's the company. It's called Comic Life Magic.
I played with it for about 5 minutes and made actually a pretty nice design and printed it out that had my wife laughing.
Yeah, Comic Life is a comic storyboarding product for the Mac. Of course, actually, they make it for Windows, and Comic Life's new product is called Magic. They've harnessed the core graphics technology of the Mac. It only works in Leopard, so you can't, you know, you can't use an old Mac with this.
With Tiger or anything like that. It is definitely – we've talked about that in the past on the show, that what Leopard really is bringing is not necessarily a change in the OS for the end user, but what it's going to allow the developers to do. And this is a prime example of what the developers can do because of Leopard.
I mean, these guys are some of the most creative developers I have seen over the last 5-6 years. They build iPhone and, the iPod iPhoto library into it so that it harnesses iLife. So you don't have to open up other libraries. You don't have to, you know.
You don't have to have multiple applications open. You can have this, and there's all your pictures right there. It sees the albums and the last imported and everything.
All that stuff, as well as EyeSight. It harnesses the use of the EyeSight camera from your MacBook or MacBook Pro. So you can take a photo, place it into your comic strip or whatever it might be that you're doing. I created one in less than 10 minutes. I created something. And you're able to export it to iPhoto immediately or to email, export it to TIFF file. It's phenomenal what they're able to do with the core imaging on Leopard or within Leopard.
Yeah. So it's a nice application. I like it a lot so far.
It's beautiful.
Sam, we appreciate you coming on the show. What do you got for us next week? Do you know yet?
Oh, God. Next week, we're going to do a giveaway. We might as well tell people. We're going to do a giveaway with Scott Evest on one of their jackets. I think it's called Essential. I forgot, Tim, if it's called the Essential jacket. But it's on their website. If you go to scottevest.com, we're going to give away a jacket. And it's really, really nice. And so you have to stay tuned. That's the big giveaway. There's going to be one other cool Mac picks we'll talk about, but Scott Evest is the highlight of the show.
And that'll be more details next week. You can enter that contest next week. There's going to be a contest this week, too, like I said at the beginning of the show, and we'll get to that in a minute. Sam, I want to thank you for coming on this week, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
Stay tuned. Right now we've got an All Over the Mac with John Nemo this week. He's talking about microphones again. He did a little bit of a review, two different microphones, the TuneTalk stereo for the iPod from Belkin and the Blue Microphones USB from Dr. Bot. So let's listen to John Nemo real quick, and we'll be right back with BJ.
Hi, it's John Nemo from All Over the Mac here at the My Mac Podcast. Thanks for sticking with us as we test a series of small portable microphones. We're in a little bit of a bind because obviously we cannot tell what the microphone sounds like until we listen to the playback during the actual podcast. A couple of weeks ago, we had a test of the X-Tag microphone, which is an expensive wireless microphone from Revo Labs. And in that same test, we also compared it to a Tuneware iPod microphone that you stick in the bottom of your iPod, and then you can record live using Apple's utility that's built into the iPod. Well, I found both of those microphones extremely easy to use, but when I listened to the playback during the podcast, the audio really didn't sound that great. So I'm not going to start all over again, but I just want you to bear with me while I do a couple of live tests. This time, I'm using the Snowflake microphone from Blue Microphones, bluemic.com, BLUEMIC, bluemic.com. And I just need to listen to it ahead of time to hear what it sounds like. So we're going to have a quick recording, then I'm going to listen to it, and then we'll have a little bit of commentary. We're going to start with a little family-friendly song from the 50s, originally by Tommy Tucker. Put on your red dress, baby, 'cause we're going out tonight. Put on your red dress, baby, 'cause we're going out tonight. boxing gloves in case some fool may wanna fight. Okay, now we will listen to that. I'll be right back. I would consider those two recordings using the Snowflake from Blue Mike pretty decent. The clarity is good, the volume is acceptable, and the sound is obviously pitched pretty much from mid-range to treble. There's no bass, and there's not a true high end. So I've switched over to another plug-in iPod microphone from Belkin. I'm going to turn it over, give you the exact name. It's called the Tune Talk Stereo from Belkin, and it's plugged into my iPod 80 Gig Classic at this very moment. So what we're going to do is make another recording of me singing at roughly the exact same distance from the Blue Mic, and then we'll be able to tell if the Belkin Tune Talk Stereo, being a bottom of the iPod plug-in microphone, compares favorably to a USB microphone, which is what the Snowflake is and was. And I'll have more information on that in just a moment. So stand back and stay tuned for our next musical sample. By the way, on these voice memo recorders, there's a counter, meaning 5, 6, 7 seconds, and it gives me the name of the memo. This is memo 3 on April 27th, 2008. But there's no sense of what the volume control is. So that's totally seat of pants, as opposed to using the Blue Mic or any other USB mic where I can actually see the volume control both in my sound input control panel in System Preferences and also using Audio Hijack Pro, which is the application I was using. So there is a second verse to this song, and just let me set down my iPod, leading it against monitor portion of my PowerBook while we grab the guitar and hear the second verse. Just put on your high-heel sneakers, wear your wig hat on your head. Put on your high-heel sneakers, wear that wig hat on your head. You're looking mighty fine, baby. I'm pretty sure you're gonna knock 'em dead. That was fascinating and extremely revealing. It turns out that the Belkin Tune Talk Stereo and the Snowflake USB microphone, one being a bottom of the iPod voice memo microphone and the other being a freestanding USB microphone, have fairly equivalent audio quality and timbre and tone, etc. So I think what I'm going to do is take another listen to the X-Tag from Revo Labs, another listen to the bottom of the iPod plug-in voice memo mic at Tuneware, and so we can have a firm recommendation of what is the best way to do live recordings on the fly, either using your iPod or using your computer when you don't simply want to use the built-in microphone that's part of your Apple laptop. Thanks a lot for listening. If you have any suggestions or comments or wisecracks about my lousy singing or guitar playing, to tim@mymac.com. Thanks for listening to the My Mac Podcast. John Nemo signing off all over the Mac.
And thank you very much, John Nemo. It's pretty interesting, different sounding microphones, different devices that you plug them into. And at least with those two devices, they sounded very similar. So I'm looking forward to him wrapping that series up and deciding which one you should get depending on, you know, what device you want to record on. Speaking of John Nemo, David Cohen, and Guy Searle, we've got a contest this week.
Yeah, it's great.
John Nemo set this up with MacAlley, and it's going to be for a Power Tune. This is a pretty cool product. It's not only a speaker system for your iPod, it's also a protective case, and it turns into a stand. It's pretty cool. I like it a lot. But what I really like about it is I can actually plug my iPod into my computer and sync it without taking it out of this case, which is, I think, pretty important. You guys got cases that you have to take it out?
Yeah, I have, and what I like about this is that because it has all these functions in one single case, you know, you can end up going out and buying cases and speakers and everything separately. And as you say, you're swapping all the time between one function and another. This just does everything in one device. And convergence is what it's all about.
Absolutely. And this is something that John himself reviewed back in November of last year. He gave it a 4 out of 5, which is a high ranking. And we're going to give one to one lucky listener this week. Guy.
Yes.
What do they have to do to enter the contest?
They have to send an email to either tim@mymac.com or contest@mymac.com.
Actually,
Tim
turned off
your name out of a hat.
Yeah, I actually turned off the contest@mymac.com email address. It was getting inundated with spam, so don't send it to that one. Just send it to tim@mymac.com. Yep. All you got to do is put, Power Tune in the subject line, PowerTune, one word, Power Tune. Send it to tim@mymac.com, and in the body of your message, put your name, address, and phone number. Now, unfortunately, this contest is only open to citizens of the United States. Yes. Well, what happened was that they actually sent this to John in anticipation of doing the contest, rather than us just sending them the user contact information, whoever won, the winner. And so John's going to have to send it out himself, and he'd rather not have to pay a lot of money to ship it overseas. So,
VAT or anything else.
Yeah, exactly. So it's only open to citizens of the U.S. citizens. Or if you live in another country and have a U.S. shipping address. Because I know a couple of our contest winners in the past, one from Australia and one from, I don't remember where the other guy was from. But
he was Germany.
No, that was somebody else. I was thinking of somebody, I think he might have been from Cuba, to believe it or not. I don't know how he was listening to our podcast in Cuba, knowing that they just opened up computer sales in Cuba. So, but anyways, he had a...
Yeah, well, he was using his brand new 286.
There you go, his brand new 286. Apple II. And he won, but he had a mailing address in Miami. So, figure that one out. So the contest is for a Power Tune from Mac Alley. Thank you very much to Mac Alley for allowing us to give one of these away. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, great looking product.
It is. And if you have a fifth generation iPod or an iPod Classic, this could be all yours absolutely free.
Yeah, and if you go and take a look at it, it's only $34.99 at the Mac Alley website.
Speaking of looking at stuff online, Guy, we do have a new sponsor.
Yes, we do.
And they're actually going to be sponsoring our podcast for an entire year. That's pretty amazing, I think.
Big news.
Big news. And it is Otherworld Computing. Of course, we had Otherworld Computing on the show last week. Whether that had anything to do with them deciding to sponsor us, I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, one of the nice things that I like about Otherworld Computing is they're not limited on just a couple products. They have a huge array of products. And I thought, at least to kick off them advertising on the podcast, I would simply pick up a product of theirs and talk about it a little bit on the show. This week, I picked up the newer technology USB 2.0 Universal Drive Adapter. Big, long, it's a big, long amazing name, but this is an amazing product for $30. Have you looked at this guy?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I mean, basically, just about any hard drive that's been made over the last 10 years or so, you can plug it into this thing and get it connected to your computer. Well, other than SCSI, it's basically SATA and
ATA.
And IDE.
And of course, we're talking about the 2.5-inch, the 3.5-inch, and the 5.25-inch drives. So if you've got a drive, you've got data on it, and you're like, man, how am I going to get this plugged into my new iMac? There's no way I can install it in there. I really don't want to have to go buy a FireWire or a USB case. I just want to pull this data off, and maybe you've got a couple different hard drives that you want to do this to. This is a perfect solution. You just plug this right into your drive, and you plug it into your computer. And it does work with USB 1.1, but, of course, transfer speeds will be slow. And it works with a PC as well. You just have to have some software. But this is really a Mac product. This is something that Mac users are really going to get the best benefit from. I mean, if you've got an old drive,
and who doesn't,
and you still want to use it. Let's say you got an old 80 gig drive you pulled out of a MacBook or a Power Mac. It's a good drive still, right?
Yeah.
Why can't still you still, you can't use it anymore. You don't want to go out and buy another drive for it and stuff it in there. And yet one more thing stuck on your FireWire chain. And you're not, it's not going to be something you're going to use every day. It's just, you're going to put your photos on it and unplug it and leave it alone. This is perfect for something like that.
In fact, that's the best way to use something like this is to take an old drive, put something you want to archive or preserve onto it, then stick the drive in a static bag, put a label on it, and leave it on your bookshelf. And, you know, it's unlike CDs or DVDs, it's not going to decay over time. And anytime you need to access it, then you just pull it out and slap it into the drive adapter, and it's available. The thing with this device over, I mean, go to eBay and you can pick up enclosures and, for various different types of drives. But the problem is, you'll just have one enclosure. Once you put a drive in it, then that's it. That's the end of the game. That's all you can do with it.
It's a big pain in the neck to change it out again.
Exactly. It is. And also as well, you know, you'll need a 2.5 inch. You'll need a 3.5 inch if you want to put something bigger in there. If you, I mean, it's worth bearing in mind, you can use this device with a CD drive or a DVD drive. So if you say you've only got a CD writer in your Mac and you need to write a DVD, you can go out and buy really for cheap, you know, a 5.25 inch DVD writer. You'll probably pay, what, $30-$40 for that?
Easily.
Yeah. And with this, you just can plug it straight to your Mac without having to worry about getting an enclosure, mounting it up and anything. And then, you know, if it's something you're going to use occasionally, then that's going to do the job for you.
On newer Macs, you could actually use this as an emergency boot-up drive as well. It's something that you could put a completely clean, fresh, nothing wrong with it. It's fresh out of the factory. And keep it updated as well if you want. Copy of Leopard or Tiger, and it's your emergency drive.
Use it as a backup drive.
Yep. So this is a handy.
Stick it on a shelf.
I don't have one of these yet, but it's one of those. I actually went to two different stores right before Macworld looking for one because I really, really needed one. And I ended up buying a USB 2.0 enclosure for the drive that I had to get the data off of. It was, I think it was a SATA drive that I had to pull the information from. And there was no other way I can hook it up to the iMac because at the time the G5 was dying on me. It wouldn't boot up. I think that was when I started having my initial problems with the power supply. And so I got it just another drive enclosure, and it's plugged in all the time now. But, you know, the drive enclosure was just barely big enough to put my drive in and plug it in. It was a pain in the butt. You know, it's nothing that I really wanted to permanently have hooked up. This would have been a perfect solution to me, but nobody in the area carried it. Nobody. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, if I wasn't on such a tight deadline, I would have just went up to Otherworld Computing's website and ordered it from there. But again, it's the newer technology, USB 2.0 Universal Drive Adapter. We'll have a link directly to that product on the show notes for show 183.
And it's available from Otherworld Computing. You can simply go to maxsales.com.
Thank you very much to Otherworld Computing for sponsoring this week's and next week's and the week after and the week after and the week after. Infinium. That's Infinium. I just made up a word.
Infinium.
Infinium. That's right. They sell Infinium drives there, too. I didn't know if you knew that.
The never-ending drive.
That's right. Well, we'll be right back. We're going to bring in, what was his name?
RJ.
Something like that, yeah.
LJ.
AJ.
No, that was. That's close.
We're joking, of course. It's BJ Batt, and we've talked about him on the podcast in the past. We met him in person at the Macworld Expo in January, so we're looking forward to having him on the show. We'll be right back. We've talked about Macworld Expo and all the fun that Guy and David and I had there, and of course a lot of the other MyMac staffers. One of the reasons it was so fun, at least for me, and I know Guy's going to attest to this as well, and probably David, is we made a new friend. His name was BJ. I met BJ, it was about a year ago, I think, for the first time. He instant messaged me on, was it AIM? Or no, it was iChat, wasn't it, BJ?
It was indeed.
And it was during the Worldwide Developers Conference last year?
That's right. I think, what did Apple announce? And we weren't very happy with it, were we?
I can't remember now, but I remember you popped up and we just started chatting and we were following the goings-on at the same time and chatting about them. And it was interesting.
Yeah, that's right.
it was funny how it kind of grew from there. We just kind of stayed into contact, and then there you are at Macworld. And that's kind of a funny story. I get off the plane, and of course, being a smoker, the first thing I want to do is grab my luggage, get outside, and have a cigarette before I even think about hailing a taxi. And as soon as I walked outside and lit up a cigarette, my cell phone rings, and it's BJ. And he was at the airport in a rental car to pick me up. You were the man that day, BJ.
Yeah, he took everybody.
You know, I do my bit for the MyMac family and our Mac Daddy himself, you know?
It was funny. We used BJ's Garmin to try to find the hotel room that Guy Searle had actually arranged for.
It was Larry and you and me.
Right, and somebody else stayed there, too.
But it was...
Darn it. What was it?
It was the Garmin from hell.
Yes, and it led us to the wrong place.
Yeah, it took us to the Bronx.
It was the nastiest flop house that there's no way I ever would have stayed there. BJ and I pull up, and we're looking at this thing through the window, and BJ kept saying, there's no effing way that this is the place. You can't stay here. Tim, there's no way. I can't allow you to stay here.
God, no. I mean, it was like those gun holes in some of the windows, and immediately we hatched a plan, didn't we?
Yeah, BJ, your sense of humor is so close to mine, it's almost scary.
Oh, that is scary.
And poor Guy was at the butt end of our sense of humor that day, wasn't he?
Yeah. I was the last one that you sprung that on.
Yeah, the prank was we would go back and grab Larry, who came in maybe an hour after I did, and we would take him to the same hotel and saying, you know, this is the hotel.
The whole way in the car, didn't he waffle on, this is Larry, about how he would not stay in anything less than a Marriott?
That's right. That's right. That he had standards, and there's just no way he was going to stay in a bad hotel.
So we took him to the Bates Motel, didn't we? Yeah.
He was completely dumbfounded. He just kept looking at this hotel and shaking his head like. And of course, here's the thing, that the outside of it, the name on the hotel somewhat matched what the name of the hotel we were actually staying at. It did match. So without knowing any better, you're going to think that that's it. And Larry was beside himself, knowing that his kid brother, Guy here,
that's me,
had arranged this hotel, and there was just no way that he was going to stay at this hotel. So, of course, BJ and I brought him back to the real hotel and calmed him down. But then it was time for Guy's flight to get in. Yeah. I stayed at the hotel this time. So BJ, you're going to have to explain it from this point because I wasn't in the car.
Well, I think Guy had already gotten off the airplane in a slightly foul mood. You know, he looked disheveled and he wasn't happy. So that made me even happier, knowing that it'd be quite interesting to take him to this hotel. So I took him to this hotel.
Now, you have to remember, I'm 6'6" and I weigh about 285 pounds. Go ahead.
And not only has he gotten off this aeroplane disheveled, he has to kind of shoehorn himself into this Pontiac that I'd rented.
Which was not a very good car.
It wasn't. And I'm sure when I returned, it didn't work anymore. So we got Guy into this Pontiac, and I took him to this hotel, and he went white. I honestly thought I was going to have to resuscitate him. And then he kind of came, and then he kind of came round and all the expletives came out of his mouth. It was terrible. And I had to admit that we played a prank on him, because I thought at that point I thought he was going to hurt somebody. So I had to come down. You know that drill you have to do when somebody's been in some sort of drama? Put him in the car and offer him some tea and a mint. And said, no, it's a joke. And then I blamed you, Tim. I said it was all Tim's idea.
Yeah. Well, it was our idea, BJ.
Well, I'm miles away
now. At that point, though, Larry was involved, too, because after we pranked him, he was all for pranking Guy.
Yeah, shocker.
Was he in the car with you?
Yes, he was. He was in the back seat, as a matter of fact.
In fact, Larry was giving a running commentary. He was building Guy up for this whole thing. It was quite cool. We should use Larry in the future if we want to stitch somebody up, as the British call it.
So, obviously, you're in England, BJ.
I am.
What's the Mac? I know what the Mac scene is from talking to David Cohen here, but what's your impression? Because you guys are not in the same city, obviously.
No,
right?
David is further up north. I'm right in the middle of England.
So you're in the nice sunny part.
Yeah, we're in the nice. We actually speak English over here. I'm just joking, David. Well, basically, I started using a Mac. And when I started using a Mac, there was this whole idea that Macs were only for pretentious kind of yuppies or these designer types.
And they're not?
Well, I don't know. I don't think I fit into either of those categories. the details of my Mac usage is inconsequential. Way back when, this is before the iPod came, you know, nobody seemed to have a Mac at home. And it was, I was the only person I knew with a Mac, and nobody else had a Mac. And in those days, you know, you'd be lucky if you could, I think there was only one printer that worked out of the box with Mac OS 9 and all that. And then all of a sudden, this little device comes along, this iPod. And now, only a few years later, everybody's got a Mac. There's Apple stores popping up all the place, and the attitude towards Apple and their products has changed immensely. It's almost as if, you know, if you go out and say to somebody you've got a Mac, they'll say, oh, I've got a Mac, I've got a MacBook, or I'm buying one, and I had an iPod, or I've got an iPhone, and because of that I wish to switch over to Apple. And it's unbelievable how popular it is over here. It's, you know, I mean, obviously, it's been popular in America for a long time, but it's taken a while to catch on here. But because of stuff like iPod and iPhone, people have warmed to it. And it's unbelievable. In fact, David, you'd probably agree, you know, up until iPod, nobody had a Mac, did they? I mean, I don't, you know.
I used to know a guy who had one of the first iMacs.
Yeah, I had.
And I think it would be fair to say that before the Apple retail stores turned up, Macs were probably seen, you know, there was the design contingent, as you say, Tim, and, you know, people in publishing who used Quark and that sort of thing, and a few guys who used Photoshop, you know, they were all big Mac guys, but generally everyone else tended to use PCs. The iMac changed that a little bit because, you know, it was very much marketed over here as, you know, you take the computer out of the box, plug it in, and within sort of 2 minutes you're on the internet. But the thing is, the iMac was kind of sold as a what I would call a posh computer. It, because we didn't have any retail stores, it was sold via the Mac resellers and also in department stores like John Lewis, which is a chain of department stores over here, and it's kind of at the upper end of the market. So, you know, the Mac was kind of seen as an expensive premium computing experience rather than something that generally people would use. And I think you're right, BJ. You know, when the iPod came along, it very much raised the awareness of Apple. And obviously, as OS X has developed and the machines have come down in price, you know, you'll find a lot of people nowadays, they might not have a Mac, but they're thinking about, well, they, you know, one day they would like to have one.
You know, it was 10 years ago last week, no, this week, actually, 10 years ago this week that Apple announced the iMac. I remember it very well. I actually went to a CompUSA in Grand Rapids to check this new iMac out. I had to see it in person. At the time, of course, my Mac was online. We did have a website, but really our focus was on the downloadable edition, the digital magazine of My Mac Magazine. And none of you guys were reading it at the time.
No.
You know.
And I went to Grand Rapids, and we wrote about this new iMac extensively in that issue of the magazine that month. And it was amazing. We knew at the time that this was really going to change, we thought, everything. And I think we were right. I think that iMac has really changed everything at this point.
You know, Tim, the iMac, the one you're talking about, is actually the first Mac I ever bought. And you're absolutely right. It has changed everything, and it is an extraordinary machine. You know, 10 years ago, when they first announced the iMac, it was a 233 megahertz iMac.
Yep.
Today, we're at 3.02 gigahertz. That is 13 times faster than the original iMac. And
that's just speed. That's not power. I mean, these are much more powerful computers.
And also, the screen size has increased by 10 inches.
Yeah, and it's widescreen.
Fully high def.
It's flat panel. You look at the new iMac, and you compare it to the old iMac, and it's totally different. I mean, the new ones really look just like a monitor.
You're right. There's no comparison between the old iMac and the new iMac, but there is one thing.
But there kind of is. When you look at it, you can kind of see the same design aesthetics that made that original iMac.
Absolutely.
And the new one.
It's still the computer and the monitor.
It is.
The most.
But it's more than that. There's something to it. There's a intangible it.
It has a soul.
You can see that's an Apple product, and this that. Well, I don't know if I'd go so far to say it has a soul, but you can definitely see that this was inspired by this. It's in the same family.
Even though there may be design differences between the original iMac and what we have now, there is one aspect of the iMac that has remained a constant, and I believe will continue to remain a constant, and that is that it is Apple's best-selling desktop. And that has been a constant. And I'm not sure off the top of my head what the figures are, but they've sold per minute or whatever it is quite a substantial number of them. So.
Well, they've sold more iMacs than any other computer ever.
Exactly. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I just think it's going to get better and better. I mean, I use a Mac. I've got a Mac Pro, and I've got all of the Apple stuff. But the iMac, there is just something about it. It's just so easy. It's not obtrusive, you know? And I think that's what the consumer wants in their house. They don't want to be baffled or, dazzled by complication and unnecessary faffery. And the iMac is not that.
One of the things about the iMac, up until the point that when Apple released the iMac, all their computers, going back until really the original Macintosh, they were all named after digits or something. You know, the Performa 410, the Quadro 650, they had these very technically sounding names. It wasn't friendly.
And really the only real difference between most of them were just what software was bundled
within the same family anyways. But with the iMac, it was a very simple name for a very simple-looking computer, even though it was much more powerful than anything else that was out at the same time. And Apple really built this iMac brand. So as the iMac improved, went from the G3 to the G4 to the G5 to the Intel machines, and I think this is very important for Apple, they kept the name. It's not iMac 2.0. It's not... this iMac, it's not iMac Lisa, it's not iMac 410, it's just iMac. I think that's important.
I think that's one of the things you have to credit Steve Jobs for. I know a lot of people will, and people have said this, they say, people think that Jobs invented the iMac and he didn't. It was already ready to go when he came back into the company. And obviously, that's true. It was an engineering project that had already been put in place. But I think what Steve Jobs brought to it is exactly that idea of, let's not make the mistakes of the past. Let's keep the brand simple. Let's make sure that anybody, not just the computer geek, can understand what this computer is, what it means to them. And that's something that you've seen carry right through to the rest of the products that Apple has on the market today. They're sold on the basis of what they are, not what they do or something arbitrary.
And every one of them has the name Mac in it somewhere now.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a MacBook Pro 17-inch, 15-inch. It tells you in the name exactly what it is.
I never liked the iBook name, but I got used to it. So when Apple basically dumped that in favor of the MacBook, I wasn't really happy about it at first, but now it seems completely natural. You have a MacBook and you have a MacBook Pro. You have an iMac and you have a Mac Pro. I think it's very important that Apple has these naming conventions that they use to simplify, at least from a casual glance, that, okay, this is for the consumer, this is for a professional, this is for a home, this is for a design studio. You can really tell just by the name, if it has Pro in it, it's going to cost more money and it's probably going to be a more powerful machine. I think that's very smart on Apple's part.
Yeah. You see, going back to my point about the iMac having a soul, and you saying that they named the iMac the iMac, and it made it Apple. But and everyone who I know, including myself, who owns an iMac, has a connection with the iMac in a way that they don't with all the other stuff, or the Mac Pro or the MacBook and all that. The iMac is kind of becomes like a part of your family, you know? Everybody likes it, and they miss it if it's not there, and that's why I think it has a soul. It inspires people in a way that not many other products do, and you know, I think iMac is probably one of the most revolutionary cult products of our time. I do believe that.
Well, you know, I originally got the first iMac when they came out, the Bonnie Blue. Actually,
the one with the tray that came out.
I take that back. It was the just a blue iMac. It was the 333 version. So it's
the blue. Well, that was Blueberry.
Blueberry, thank you. It was the Blueberry model, and I got it for my wife ostensibly. She used that for a number of years. And it was the first machine that we ever installed the beta for Mac OS X on. It ran, I think, beta up to 10.3. And it was a good machine. It had 128 gigs of RAM, or gigs, 128 megabytes of RAM. And it was a good machine. It's still sitting in my basement right now. I haven't got rid of it. But I never used an iMac personally. I always had either a PowerBook, or I'm sorry, a PowerMac G4, a PowerMac G5. And when the time came to replace the last G5, I went with an iMac. Now, I am a power user, but I am firmly convinced, for the most part, that the new iMac, especially the brand new ones that just came out last week, are more than enough power for 99.9% of the tasks anybody needs to do on a Macintosh. Does anybody disagree with that?
No, I can't. I've ordered one.
Have you ordered a brand new one?
Yeah. At the moment, I'm using the 2.8 with the Core Extreme. When I had this one made, I had all the bits on it.
Yeah.
And now, when they announced the new one, the 3.02, I've ordered it, but I'm going to have to wait to get it because I think they've got to build them with the terabyte hard drives, and there's a little delay on them.
What are you going to do with your old machine? What do you do with your old machines, BJ?
Well, you know, my friend we met in at Macworld, David.
Yeah.
He's a wizard with eBay. So he will often either eBay them for me, or I will put them in some other place somewhere. But usually I'll get him to eBay them because I always replace one with a newer one before they're worth less. It's better to sell them while you still can, really.
Yeah, I agree.
Mac computers seem to hold their value very well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, I've got one of the 2.8 gigahertz extreme, blah, 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 blah. So if you want to send it anywhere where it can be next to his brother, I've got a good home here. No, just kidding.
It'll cost you more to have it shipped.
You're
over.
Right.
Probably better just buy one.
We're going to keep BJ around for the entire show. Unlike usually we have a software guy or hardware guy on talking about his company. BJ doesn't run a company that's making Mac software or hardware or anything like that. Really, BJ was a listener of the show, a fan of the show, and that's how we met him. But we wanted to have him on the show because we became good friends at Macworld Expo. So we're not going to get into, well, how does that work? And, you know, when did you do this? And all that kind of thing. BJ is basically one of us, right, BJ?
I am absolutely one of you. I'm a member of the My Mac family. And a big family it is, and a close family we are.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit. Anybody else having problems with Safari? Because for me, anyways, Safari 3.0 has been the buggiest version. It locks up on me all the time. If I go to a site that has Flash sometimes not Flash, for no rhyme or reason, Safari 3 locks up on me all the time. I'm getting really frustrated. And the reason that I'm sticking with it simply is because I can easily, using .Mac, sync all the bookmarks on this computer with the laptop that I use all the time and a Mac Mini that's kind of my backup.
I would have to agree with you. In fact, web pages seem to load slower as well.
Slower, absolutely. I don't think that the new version of Safari is a very good browser, at least as far as stability.
It's not. It's almost like having a dial-up connection sometimes.
It is. Yeah, have you had any problems with it?
I've seen that as well, that extreme slowdown. And in fact, I changed my DNS servers, and that seemed to improve it somewhat. But there's definitely something weird going on in Safari.
It doesn't. There's no rhyme or reason. It's just for no reason. I'm looking at a page. It's loaded. There's no, you know, the status is done. So in other words, it's not loading anything in the background. And I start scrolling down the page, and boom, beach ball, for no reason.
No, I must admit I've had that. And at times I thought that maybe it's my internet connection or something like that. And everything else seems to be working perfectly. All the other downloads and stuff are going.
Yeah, I jump over to other applications and it works fine.
You know, for a long time, Firefox had a memory leak.
Yep.
That I think has been fixed now, and I'm wondering with this version 3.0 code base whether there's something like that going on with it.
Well, I'm thinking about breaking out some diagnostic software and letting them run in the background while I'm using Safari and see if I can catch what's going on, because, you know, like I said, a web page is completely loaded. It shouldn't be pulling anything down, and yet it locks up. It's very, very odd.
I think an update will have to be imminent, because I don't think Apple can continue like this if they're trying to, you know, make headway in the browser market. You know, at the moment, you know, Firefox seems a far, far more viable option than Safari.
I kind of agree, although I did see that the stats for Safari users as far as PC users went way up when Apple did their little trickery, adding in the ability to download it when iTunes was updated.
Oh, yeah, they and took
it. It worked.
Microsoft's book, didn't
it? Yeah, it worked, though. You can't argue a success.
Yeah,
a lot of people
kind of got spanked for that, and they no longer have it automatically checked when you use software updates.
If I was Apple, I would have left it. If I was Apple, I would have left it just the way it is.
Bad publicity is better than no publicity.
The thing is, it was like that. You're right, they've changed it now, but it was like that for at least 3-4 weeks. And during that time, you know, I mean, how many iPods are out there? What, 80 million, something like that?
Something like that.
A proportion of those users are Windows users, and a good proportion of them probably updated iTunes and got Safari during that period. So maybe that was what they wanted, was to you know, just quickly bump up Safari in a strong way.
Do you know what it is? It's these do-gooders that you have that, you know, complain about everything, you know, these like bozos that have got nothing better to do. I mean, who gives a damn if they've downloaded Safari or, you know, Apple are doing this, or, you know, it's really in the grand scheme, it's inconsequential. I mean, they made out that it was some sort of great big, you know, privacy issue or whatever. It wasn't. They blew it out of all proportion. It was ridiculous.
Well, that's just blogger democracy at work. You know, it's the there's a minority voice on the internet who can make, you know, make a noise. And I think you're right, BJ. I think outside of the Apple tech community, I don't think many people were particularly concerned about it. It certainly didn't hit some of the more mainstream news outlets, and they're normally quick to jump on an Apple bashing story if they think they've got one.
And I'll tell you something else, David. Apple's software update software certainly wasn't reporting back to Apple everything you were doing, like some of the other things that are out there. You know, it was not an issue, yeah.
Speaking of Windows, one of my favorite softwares that I use pretty frequently, and, you know, sometimes you have to have access to Windows software. And for me, I'm using VMware's Fusion. I really like the program. It works well. They just released a beta 1 of version 2.0. Big things about this one is, and this is going to really help me because I have a dual monitor setup, you can now finally use multiple monitors in Windows when you're using VM Fusion.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, that's a big deal. It was kind of neat in one respect that I would have Windows on my Sidecart 23-inch monitor and the Mac OS on the 24-inch monitor. So it looked like literally two different computers are running, but it was really one computer.
And you can still do that. I loaded the Beta up this afternoon and had a quick play around with it. And, you know, the monitor spanning mode is optional. You don't have to turn that on. What they've done is they've built the technology right into the product. So they have this, I think it's called Coherence or... Unity. Coherence is the
Unity version.
Yeah, the Unity mode, where effectively the Windows desktop disappears and any applications, Windows apps you're running, look like they're part of OS X. Now, in the past, those apps were stuck on one monitor. If you had two, you couldn't move them across. Now you can just they're just another window, and they behave exactly like an OS X application. So if you've got a sidecart monitor, you can, you know, bring up a Windows email program and stick it on the sidecart, and then still be able to see your OS X desktop on the other monitor. So you know, they've really done a number with the features in this. Every feature they've built into it, I've looked through the features and thought, yeah, that's something that needed looking at, and the way they've approached it is you know, the right way to go.
The other big feature I think for this beta 2 is virtual printing that automatically detects and maps the default Mac printer and configures all the printers that's on the Mac to work with Windows. That's huge.
Absolutely. Guys, because it just makes it nice and easy.
Yep.
I must admit, I'm not a virtuoso in this virtualization thing. What is the big differences between Parallels and VMware? What are the benefits?
That's for a much larger, longer show, yeah. I think. it's minute, but it seems to me that VMware is really more on the cutting edge. They're really doing a lot more with the technology. Mm. But they've also been making virtualization software a lot longer than Parallels has. Yeah.
Some of the Parallels features, Parallels have taken this approach. They really want to try and make Windows and Mac completely seamless. So with the latest version of Parallels, you can open up a document either in, if you've got a Word document, say, you can set it so it opens up in the Mac version of Word, or it can open up in the Windows version of Word, and if you've got it installed. And if Parallels isn't running, it will far up in the background to do that automatically. It kind of blurs all the Windows file system and the Mac file system together. But for me, I don't feel very comfortable doing that. I really want to keep Mac and Windows a bit more separate than that. And, VMware has a much more structured approach because they're a much more corporate company. They're used to dealing with big corporate clients. The other big, and I think it's worth mentioning to our listeners, the other big thing for me about VMware Fusion version 2 is that if you're a version 1 customer, they will give you version 2 for free without charging any source of upgrade fee whatsoever.
That's an amazing announcement.
Given the amount of features they've stuffed in, is
They could have milked us for a little bit of extra money, and they didn't.
Yeah,
Parallels did. Cool. I did pay for some updates on Parallels. I never used the damn thing either.
There's another difference for you there, BJ. You know, we were talking about one of the reasons that a lot of Mac users want something like Windows on their Mac is so they can play games.
Right.
We had Jeremy White from CodeWeavers back on show 181. On the show, and he was talking about their product, Crossover Games. During the show and after the show, he actually set Guy up with a copy of Crossover Games, and I believe you got a copy as well, didn't you, David?
I did, yes. I've been looking at the office site.
So you guys have been using that. So Guy, how's your experience been with Crossover Games from CodeWeavers?
It's been kind of a mixed bag, but not necessarily the fault of CodeWeavers. Right after I got it installed, I went down to a local store that doesn't advertise, so won't get mentioned, and I bought three items. Oddly enough, I bought Office Suite 2007, which is essentially OpenOffice, and yes, I know that there's now a Mac native version, and there's an X11 version, but I actually wanted to get the PC version just to try it out. I also bought Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, the Platinum Edition, which
that's a game,
right? Which includes the original game, and it also includes two of the add-on packs, Soaked and Wild. And the last thing I bought was Valve's Half-Life. It was the Half-Life 2 Orange Box, which has, it's got Episode 2, it's got Team Fortress, it's got Portal, it's got, all the Valve games.
Have you played Portal yet?
No, I have not yet played Portal.
Oh, the cake is a lie. That's all I'm saying. The cake is a lie.
I have no problems with Office Suite or Open Office for Windows running it on a Mac without Windows. I installed Half-Life 2, and I've been playing that, and there's been a couple of issues with that. Just to give you some background, I'm running this on a 2.16 gigahertz iMac 24-inch screen. It's got 128 meg graphics card. It's certainly not a super powerful machine.
It's enough to run that program.
Yes.
Those games.
It's more than enough to run the program. But something I've discovered from playing the game is
it's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. If you're going to do this, play it in such a way that it's not taking up the full screen. Because
have you installed Windows at all on boot camp on that machine?
No, I have not. I have.
That might be something you want to look at. Maybe installing XP via boot camp, boot into Windows that way, and play the game on the iMac.
Well, I've got VMware. What I'd like to do, and I wasn't able to do it. I'm sure it's probably possible. I would like to install Windows on a separate drive and then have everything on there and then have that, you know, connect up through VMware.
I don't know. I don't think, though, that you could boot in boot camp through an external drive to Windows, though. I don't think that that would work.
Well, I'm not so much concerned about booting up into Windows, but I do have...
Well, it gives you a good... The reason I say that, though, is it gives you a good comparison. If this was a real Windows machine, running Windows natively, not virtualization, not any of the little tricks and things that CodeWeavers is doing, but actually it is Windows. There's no other layer of an OS, obviously Mac OS 10.
Right.
It's just Windows running the application on the same hardware, and then how it performs in crossover games or VMware. That would give you a really good indication that the glitches that you're seeing, is this an issue with my hardware, or is this an issue with crossover games?
I have the Orange Box, and I run it on my MacBook Pro, which is the first generation 15-inch Core Duo model. And I've got that running under boot camp, and Half-Life 2 runs absolutely perfectly on that machine under XP through boot camp. And Command & Conquer 3, I've also got that loaded on there, and that also runs without any problems. So, the machines are capable of running these, natively running Windows and this software without any sort of problems. Obviously, crossover, it's going to suffer some overhead because it's still running under OS 10 when you're doing this. The important thing to remember is, of course, you can run the game without having to have a copy of Windows.
Right.
Which if you're going to go properly licensed, you're looking at a big chunk of change for a copy of Windows to run under boot camp. And also, what I found, I loaded up Crossover this afternoon and put Office 2003 into it. And, I need to do some testing, but initially it looked perfectly fine. It looked like all the programs were behaving exactly as I would expect them to. Obviously, they're nowhere near as demanding as a computer game are. But right. I think, you do have to remember that the crossover is doing a fair amount of heavy lifting to get this software running.
Yes. Well, just to get it work at all.
Exactly. So, you probably kind of had to, you probably have to expect there's going to be the odd bump. But what you avoid with crossover is the overhead of having to set Windows up under boot camp.
And we should clarify with this program, with Crossover Mac, you don't need Windows.
Right. And you don't need to do anything. You load up Crossover, you give it your installed disk for your application, your game, and it goes away and does everything for you. Now,
that's if the game is compatible, because they basically take every single program that works under Crossover Mac and they massage it so that it works with that program.
That's right.
And so with Half-Life, one thing I've noticed is I'm playing the game, everything's fine. All of a sudden I start seeing some artifacts. That's my cue to save the game and get out of it if I can. Because if I don't, the machine locks up and I literally have to hold down the power button, power down the machine, do a hard boot, and then come back.
BJ, do you think boot camp or virtualization software is probably the more popular choice? Obviously, you said you're using virtualization software, but do you ever use boot camp as well?
No, I don't use boot camp because I don't like the having to partition business, first of all, because I always seem to make a mess of that. And but the most important thing about virtualization is that you don't have, you can have them both running side by side and you don't have to reboot and boot into one or boot or whatever, and now this new virtualization stuff they've got, this coherence mode and whatever, it all works so seamlessly, so you can just effortlessly go between Mac OS and Windows. I mean, you often ask yourself, why would you want to do that anyway? But there are often times where you've got no option but to use Windows for that one thing, and it's just handy then.
Absolutely. Up on the site right now, we've got a lot of content since our last podcast. Right at the top, at least right underneath this podcast, is Fenestration 41. Fenestration used to be right here on the podcast. It was, David here would record it, send it in, and I would drop it into the show until David basically became our co-host.
Yep.
So we don't have Fenestration on the show anymore, even though we still talk about a lot of the same subjects. You decided to bring Fenestration into the text world. In other words, it's in print now. And Fenestration 41, The Curse of the Free Public Wi-Fi. What's that article about?
This was interesting. When I was flying back from the States from my vacation a couple of weeks ago, I spotted in an airport a hotspot that was called Free Public Wi-Fi.
I've seen those myself.
That's right. And I'd heard about this, so I thought it was worthwhile just, talking to about it to our readers. Effectively, what it is nobody knows whether it's a deliberate feature or a bug, but what happens with Windows XP is if it connects to a hotspot and stores that hotspot in its preferred networks list, and then you move the laptop away from the hotspot and fire it up again, it will say, oh, I can't find that hotspot, so I'll just name myself the same name as that hotspot and republish it as an ad hoc network connection, effectively a computer-to-computer connection. The problem is the next Windows user sat next to him in the airport sees that and goes, I'll connect to that and see if I can get free internet.
And you just connected to someone else's computer, or at least
that's right. And so what's happened is obviously at some point somebody named a hotspot Free Public Wi-Fi, connected to it with their computer, and then opened their computer up in a public place. And of course, somebody next to them spotted it, thought that looks good, Free Public Wi-Fi, I'll connect to that. And of course, it was then put into their network list, and so on.
And it's gone on and on and on from there.
The world's worst chain letter.
Good analogy. Yeah,
it's like it's in every single public place, and so I really wanted to sort of highlight this. I mean, it's a typical example of pretty lousy programming or bad code. And Microsoft they've patched it. They've never published the patch, and even if you install the patch, to turn it on and do some configuration, it's not really straightforward. So I just want to let Mac users know what this was, and don't bother try and go for it because it's not good. So
John Nemirovsky's got a BookBytes special report. You know, he's been writing BookBytes for 10 years now. That's a long time. We are, of course, one of the only Mac sites out there that has continuously published book reviews. Not just about Macintosh items or iPod or iPhone items, but tech books. And this one in particular is called The Photograph. And he actually interviews, and it's a really interesting interview too, with the gentleman who wrote the book, Professor Harold Mate. And that's a pretty good interview. So go check that out at mymac.com. We have a new writer, Mark Seeley. He did a review for us of Bento. He actually helped me with that because I was going to write the review and I was way far behind. As Guy knows, we actually met with the FileMaker folks at the MacWorld Expo. And I've had Bento since right before it was released that they gave a copy to me. I just haven't, honestly, I haven't played with Bento as much as I have wanted to. It's one of those applications that's in my dock. I fire it up and I start to use it, and then I get distracted by something else, and I never get back to it.
Yeah, but so I'm also real glad you're also a big FileMaker guy as well.
I am, and a lot of the stuff that I do in databases, I've already created in FileMaker, or I'm just so used to it being in FileMaker that's kind of my default. I keep track of every bill that I pay in a database. Perfect for Bento. Unfortunately, I've already got that in FileMaker, and every time I sit down to write up the bills, to pay the bills, I automatically go to FileMaker and start entering them in there. Plus, I think, I'm using an older version of FileMaker, and it has a lot less overhead than Bento does. So,
Dan gave me his copy of Bento at Macworld. And I'll tell you what I don't like about Bento is the way it takes your information, all of it, and dumps it into this thing. You know, like all your address book contacts and everything. I don't want it. I don't want it to do that.
Well, I don't like the fact that everything is in one application rather than separate databases. That's like a data file in
folders.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm also finding that when I go into Bento and I think, okay, I'm going to create this thing that's going to be a solution for this problem that I'm having with my data in FileMaker, and maybe that's because I am an expert FileMaker user. I find that I'm very handicapped in Bento. It just doesn't seem to give me the freedom to create what I want to create. We have to wrap the show up real quick here, so let me go through a quick list of what we got. Donnie Yankolo did a Creativity Express. It's a software program.
That looks like a cool program.
It does. It looks like a very cool program. John Nemirovsky has an article called Boa Designs Incorporated. fashion, accessories, and style. Yes, you can have all that with your digital life. David Weeks reviewed the Iceware from Toonware. That looks pretty cool. That was actually in the latest episode. See, I'm kind of in the podcasting frame of mind. So that was in the latest issue of iProng magazine, as well as the Clear Boost review. He gave the Clear Boost really low marks, 2 out of 5, which it's not very good. David Weeks also reviewed the Macworld Super Guide Mac OS 10 Hints Leopard Edition. I've heard that's a really good book, not just from his review, but I've heard good things about that. Donnie Yankel reviews Photoshop Studio with Burt Monroy Digital Painting. And last but not least, Bruce Black, who's been contributing on the site for, geez, half decade now. We don't hear a lot from Bruce, usually. He's kind of, I don't want to say faded away, but he just hasn't been as involved as he used to be. He came up with an OmniWeb review. It's a web browser that you actually have to pay for.
What?
And with the problems, I know, it's strange. And with the problems that I've been having with Safari lately, might be worth checking out. I don't know.
Yeah, I used OmniWeb for a while. It was a good program.
Yep. Anything else before we wrap this up, BJ?
Yeah, one thing, and it's a very, very important thing, and obviously, you know, I have to mention that I have myself done this. There's an option to donate to my Mac because, you know, Tim, you do a very good job, and like myself, a lot of people appreciate what you do. And as I said to you before, you know, we like to contribute in many ways. And, you know, some of those ways is by doing reviews or writing something or like coming on the show. But obviously bandwidth and things are not free. And I have myself contributed. In fact, I think I was the first person to contribute, you know.
Yeah, you were.
But I would urge people to contribute because, you know, I say this as not only a friend but as a fan of the show as well, that you know you do an absolutely fabulous job, and you know we should all chip in and help to continue to support the show so that it can carry on and that great content can get out there. And obviously this content costs money, so please contribute.
I appreciate that. You know, a lot of people may assume that MyMac magazine, MyMac.com, is some big company or something, but when you get right down to it, it's me and it's the people who contribute to it.
What makes MyMac so special is that we all get together and we're like a big family. It's not like you talking at people. It's not like David talking at people, telling them, you know, do this, do that. You know, it's we're all involved. It is a big family. We're all involved and we're all part of it. And that's what separates MyMac from all the other podcasts. And you know, I appreciate that. And I would urge, you know, if you can donate, you know, but obviously people will contribute in other ways, but that's just one way.
Well, I appreciate that. Anything from you, David, before we wrap here?
No, I've got a busy week. I've got some reviews to get through this week, so I'm trying to.
I have my review of, remember that gaming pad thing that I wrote you guys about? Yeah. That I kind of made a joke of, made light of. I actually started using it. Man, this is really nice. It ostensibly it's a mouse pad, but they call it a gaming pad. But it's really nice. Wait till you read my review. It's going to be the beginning of the next week, probably Tuesday. That will go live. But it's actually a really nice product. I almost feel bad for kind of disparaging it a couple weeks ago.
Well, Dave,
it's a nice product.
David, it's good to know that you've got a hard week ahead of you. I've got an even tougher week. I've got 5 days to visit Starbucks at least 25 times.
So it's worth saying to the listeners, if you want to follow BJ on Twitter, you'll get a dazzling insight into his life, which, you know, normally starts about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon when he gets out of bed and heads out to Starbucks, and then it kind of rolls downhill from there on a daily basis.
Surprised. Go ahead and buy a damn franchise there.
I looked into it. They're not franchised. They are all owned by Starbucks.
Oh, really?
What is your Twitter handle?
It's BJ Batt. So it's BEEJAYBHATT. So join me on Twitter. Let's talk about Starbucks and Max.
Guy Searle, you're also on Twitter.
Yeah, I have the handle of Mac Parrot
or Wookie.
So if anybody wants to file the bald Wookiee. If anybody wants to
speaking of these weird sites that I've been making in various programs, there's a new poll on machippie.com, and it has nothing to do with SciStar. So if you get a minute, go on over to MacHippie.com and vote in the poll.
I cracked Robert Hazelrig up when I called it Fist.
Yeah.
David Cohen, you're also on Twitter.
I'm David B. Cohen. So.
And I am MyMac. Very easy to find me at Twitter. In fact, if you go up to the MyMac site, on the upper right-hand corner of the page, you'll see a little Twitter logo. Just click that, and you go right to the MyMac Twitter page.
That's cool. Didn't see that.
Start following us. You didn't see that. See, and I also changed the RSS logo up there, Guy. I sneak things in. A lot of stuff going on with the site. I am updating the video section of the site. So if you go up there and you click the video button, right now I don't have any captions or anything, but it's a whole bunch of linked YouTube videos that was all produced through MyMac.com. You can watch those. We're going to have some more videos. In fact, I've got some videos coming up. That being said, we need to wrap this show up. We want to thank Otherworld Computing for sponsoring us this week. And, of course, like I said, go check out that Universal Drive Adapter. It is really cool, and it's only $30.
MacSales.com.
MacSales.com. You guys will get a lot of use out of it. And, of course, we do have a contest this week. As I said earlier in the show, thanks to John Nemirovsky and McAlley, it's for the PowerTune. You can get one for free, save you $35. All you have to do is send an email to tim@mymac.com. Put PowerTune in the subject line, name, address, and phone number in the body of the message, and U.S. listeners only, unfortunately. And if you're the randomly selected winner, we'll get a copy out to you. So that's the show this week. We'll be back next week. We had a guest next week, but it looks like he's going to drop out. He wanted to chat with us, but only via telephone, and I'm not going to do that. So it would have been a very interesting conversation, but I don't really want to chat via Skype to a telephone and, you know, that's okay. But we got another company that looks like they're very interested in coming on the show, and we have an opening next week, so we'll see if we can get them on. We'll also reveal who wins the contest for the PowerTune. And like Sam Levin said at the very beginning of the show, he's got a contest for next week as well. So for Guy, BJ, and David, we are out of here.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.